while exploits in the arena of combat were the way to establish and enhance a good reputation and gain status in a community. Lack of appropriate humility was a sure way to taint one's reputation and erode hard-won status. In other words, once the battle was over, it was time to be humble. To traditional Lakota, humility was the one virtue that enhanced other virtues. To be generous was good, for example, as long as one did not call attention to his or her generosity. Anything good that was done or said with humility carried more impact. According to all the stories, one of the most humble of all Lakota was Crazy Horse. Crazy Horse was Oglala Lakota. The Oglala, which means to scatter one's own, were and are one of the seven Lakota groups. His is one of the most familiar names to emerge from the turbulent 19th century in the American West. In Western American history, written by Euro-Americans, he is popularly regarded as the conqueror of both General George Crook and Lieutenant Colonel George Custer. On June 17, 1876, he led 700 to 900 Lakota and Cheyenne warriors and stopped Crook's northward advance at the Battle of the Rosebud on the Rosebud River in what is now north central Wyoming. 8 days later, 1,000 to 1,200 Lakota and northern Cheyenne warriors under his leadership, as well as the able leadership of several other notable Lakota battlefield leaders, defeated Custer's 7th Cavalry at the Battle of the Little Bighorn. Crazy Horse was 36 years old at the time, and his combat experience and leadership helped to thwart, albeit temporarily, the United States Army's grand plan of 1876 to capture and herd all the Lakota onto reservations once and for all. But we Lakota don't remember him primarily because he defeated Crook or Custer. We remember him because, in spite of his larger-than-life achievements on the field of battle, he was a humble man. Crazy Horse was born to be a warrior and a leader. He had an ability to stay calm in the midst of chaos and confusion, and to lead by example. In the Lakota society of his day, the arena of combat provided opportunities for fighting men to display skill and courage. Acts of bravery on the battlefield earned them honors within their warrior societies and status in the society at large. Many men who achieved a following as combat leaders also went on to become political leaders as well, such as the Hunkpapa Lakota Sitting Bull. As a matter of fact, Crazy Horse's steadiness and the fire earned him his first adult name prior to Crazy Horse. Because he had a habit of dismounting in the midst of fighting, then kneeling beside his war horse to take deliberate aim at the enemy, he became known as His Horse Stands in Sight. Such conduct earned him more combat honors by his early 20s than most men achieved in an entire lifetime. He was known far and wide for his daring and recklessness in combat, but also for his ability to make good tactical decisions. If anyone earned the right to participate in the Waktogalaka ceremony, it was he. But according to all the stories handed down about him, he never did. For all of his life, Crazy Horse was painfully shy and probably spoke in public only twice. Though he was entitled to wear the symbols of his many achievements on the battlefield, eagle feathers, he was known to dress plainly. If he wore any decoration at all, it was usually a single feather. His refusal to do what was expected of all accomplished warriors, recount his exploits in combat, raised more than a few eyebrows because he was bucking tradition. But it also endeared him to many. Those exploits are the basis for the legend of Crazy Horse. But sadly, they overshadow the real man. The man, the stories say, who would walk through camp with his head down in humility when he had every right to strut with arrogance. to the Lakota who knew, loved, and admired him. His humility only enhanced his achievements, and he didn't need to recount his exploits. Many, many others did that for him. Crazy Horse didn't ask or volunteer to become a leader. His reputation brought men to him, especially during that critical period following the Battle of the Little Bighorn, when the U.S. Army stepped up its campaign against him. Because of his reputation and the humility with which he always conducted himself, just over 900 people followed him. Only a few more than 100 were fighting men. The rest were old people and women and children, and they all endured hardship and uncertainty. But of all the fighting men, and most, if not all, of the others would have continued to fight against the whites to the last man or woman or child if Crazy Horse had chosen that as the best course of action. But he chose otherwise. As a true testament of their loyalty, Crazy Horse's people followed him into an uncertain future when, for the welfare of his non-combatants, he finally surrendered to the United States. He was the last Lakota leader to do so. Without a doubt, people followed Crazy Horse because of his courage as a fighting man and his ability as a military and civilian leader. We Lakota will always remember him for those very reasons. As a Sichango Oglala Lakota, I will always admire him for those achievements. But I will likewise never forget that he was a humble man. For me, his humility outshines his fame. Humility was a virtue that the Lakota of old expected their leaders to possess. A quiet, humble person, we believed, was aware of other people and other things. An arrogant, boastful man was only aware of himself. Interestingly, our methods of selecting leaders today seem to favor the arrogant and boastful. The process that we, as a nation, endure every 4 years is the same that many Native American tribes or nations seem to mimic on a more frequent basis. In Lakota society of the not-too-distant past, however, it was the people who approached the man who possessed the qualities of leadership. One of those qualities was humility. If humility was a virtue important for everyone to practice, it was absolutely necessary for a leader. Humility can provide clarity, or arrogance makes a cloud. The last thing the people wanted was someone whose judgment and actions were clouded by arrogance. Several years ago, I watched my uncle, then president of the Rosebud Sioux tribe, diffuse a volatile moment with simple humility. A woman walked into his office and proceeded to ridicule and berate him, insulting him in every way she could think of because she or her family had been denied a service by one of the tribal service agencies. He didn't interrupt her. He waited until she finished her tirade. Then, instead of taking umbrage because he and the office he held had been grievously insulted, he, with his head down, quietly and respectfully replied, "Yes, that is why I have this job, so you can insult me when something goes wrong. Thank you for telling me your problem." The woman could only walk away. She had expected her word to be met with anger, because an arrogant person would have reacted in that manner. When there was no anger, no arrogant retort, she didn't know how to handle the humility. Now, the process of selecting leaders apparently leaves no room for humility. A man or woman who believes he or she can be a leader approaches the people by declaring candidacy. In most cases, the candidate is not known to the people and consequently is forced to do at least a little boasting and certainly a lot of promising. To make matters worse, we are besieged by more than one candidate. This all brings to mind the story of Iktomi, the trickster. Iktomi was hungry, as usual. In fact, he couldn't remember when he had last eaten. So, without a solid plan in mind, he set about to feed himself. Circumstances were not favorable for a quick meal, however, since Iktomi was not a good hunter. As a matter of fact, he was the worst hunter around. He was not proficient with weapons, and he was very slow of foot. Strangely, though, he was confident, because he knew he was one of the trickiest beings to walk the earth. He came upon a trail and followed it. One never knew where such trails could lead, but of one thing he was certain. Chances were it would lead to opportunity, and opportunity was the key to Iktomi's survival. He gained the crest of a hill, and as he started down, he saw someone coming up the hill. It was Matho, the bear. Iktomi hid immediately. Except for Tatanka, the bison, Matho was the most powerful creature on four legs. One swipe of his paw could send skinny little Iktomi to the next world, and it was a place Iktomi was not anxious to go. From the middle of a plum thicket, Iktomi watched as Matho lumbered up the hill. Iktomi suddenly realized that he was sitting in the middle of ripe plums, a favorite food for Matho. He was on the verge of panic and about to run for his very life when he saw that Matho was covered with scars from many old wounds. An idea formed in his opportunistic little brain. Leaving the thicket, he went back down the trail and began to whistle as he walked. Matho took immediate notice, of course, but because of his poor eyesight, he had to wait to see what was making such a cheerful noise. "It's you," he growled as Iktomi stopped. "Get out of my way. I have to find food to fatten up for the winter. Go away unless you want me to eat you." Iktomi's knees were knocking and his heart was pounding. But he had a plan, and it wouldn't work if Matho saw that he was terrified. "Greetings, Brother Matho," Iktomi called out in the loudest, bravest voice he could muster. "It's good to see you. But you must step aside because I am in a hurry."